Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. David Sirota is with us to kick things off. I got his newsletter this morning. The Daily Poster is what it's called, and that's also the website, dailyposter.com. And, of course, David's Twitter handle is David Sirota. And it was a jaw dropper. David, welcome to the program, first of all. And thanks so much for dropping by this morning.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So I'm reading your newsletter, and I had no idea that 11 years ago, arguably 12 years ago, in 2009, Connecticut basically passed a law to establish a public option. And giant health insurance companies, with UnitedHealthcare at the top of the list, have done everything they can to prevent that from being implemented. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so 11 years ago, after the passage of the Affordable Care Act, Connecticut created a pathway to create a public option in its own state. If you remember, back then, the Congress did not pass a national federal public option, so states started going to work, Connecticut being one of them. Now, you might say Connecticut would be a weird place to go to work for one, only because the insurance industry itself, much of it is rooted in Connecticut. But you know what? People live in Connecticut, and people don't like paying high health insurance premiums. Of course, the insurance industry is powerful in Connecticut, and it has managed to use its political power in the state to stop a public option. The healthcare crisis has gotten worse. Now legislators have brought up another public option proposal. And what we reported at dailyposter.com is that there is video of UnitedHealth's top executives pressuring their rank-and-file workers, their rank-and-file employees, to lobby legislators in the state to kill the public option proposal that is moving through that state's legislature. And the argument against it from UnitedHealth boils down to that a public option could lower premiums. I mean, literally, the executive on the video says it would be the premiums in the public option plan would be artificially low premiums. Now, there's a debate about what the word artificially means. That word's doing a lot of work. But the point is that UnitedHealth has been making record profits during the pandemic. It has been pushing, at the same time, Connecticut regulators to approve premium increases, big premium increases in the state, and then it is telling its employees to go into their communities, get on the phones, and pressure lawmakers to kill a public option.
This is just mind-boggling. It's also a great example of why big companies don't want unions, because this, you know, if UnitedHealthcare was unionized, I suspect the response of the employees would be a whole different thing. What kind of response have they gotten so far? I read in your article that we've got There's this national lobbying group for the big health insurance companies. Now they've created state-based lobbying groups. There's one in Connecticut, and they actually have thousands of members that they've suckered in. Are these just employees, or are they just bringing in the MAGA crowd now or something?
Well, so United Healthcare made reference to other insurance companies doing the same thing. And your point about the national groups, there's a group called the Partnership. It's basically called the Partnership. That's what it's referred to as. But it has state chapters in which it is trying to stop the public option. There's a federal group that has been trying to stop the public option, and their message has been that we should basically not change the Obamacare. We should not build off of really Obamacare. We should not expand into expanding Medicaid or going to single payer. In fact, in the Connecticut video, the United Healthcare executive says they see the public option as a stepping stone to single payer. And the Partnership for America's Healthcare right. Future, which is that front group, they have made the same argument. And what's really disturbing here, Tom, is that this is not, you know, this doesn't break down a long party line. The Partnership for America's Healthcare Future is run by a former top Hillary Clinton aide. It is one of the lobbying firm that works with in D.C. Is a lot of former Democratic officials. So people need to understand that this fight, especially with the health insurance companies, I mean, it really does transcend party. It really is kind
of. This is
like
Joe Lieberman back in the day. I mean, Joe Lieberman was the guy who killed the public option in the national bill, and he was the senator from Connecticut. Surprise, surprise.
That's right. And the reason Connecticut's important in this fight over a public option, which it should be said is no replacement for Medicare for All, but the insurance industry sees it as a stepping stone for Medicare for All. The reason Connecticut is so important is because the industry also sees the idea that if they lose in the home of the insurance industry, on something like this, it will send a message to legislators in other states that don't have as big a health insurance industry headquartered in the state. It will send a message to them that go for it.
Yeah. So we have Connecticut's Healthcare Future. That's the local group. It's part of the Partnership for America's Healthcare Future Action, which right. I'm assuming is a lobbying group or a PAC or whatever they call them, and promoting this. So we've got and you also pointed out in the article that United Healthcare just had their most profitable quarter ever. I think it was. Yeah. I highlighted it here. I've highlighted so many things in your article. It's hard to find. Yeah, they showed $15 billion in profit last year. I mean, billion. Their CEO took $50 million. This, let's keep in mind, this is the company that paid Dollar Bill McGuire $1.6 billion in compensation as CEO, and he had to give back $300 million of it because the federal government was alleging fraud. This is also one of the companies that most aggressively is promoting the Medicare Advantage scam, largely through AARP and whatnot. So we've got this huge, I mean, this multi-billion-dollar company with massive profits. You've got front groups that are very, very well-funded. Who's the opposition? Who is going up against these guys? Who? What groups or what people? What are the pressure points? Who can we shout out to? Who can we call out to? What can we do to help the good citizens of Connecticut have a single-payer program, David?
Well, sure. The person who's leading the battle in the government is Kevin Lembo in Connecticut, the comptroller. The plan is basically to open up some of the same offerings that are offered to state government employees, to basically to allow people to get into parts of that plan. So Kevin Lembo, the state comptroller there, is leading that battle. There's the Universal Healthcare Foundation of Connecticut that's basically been leading this forever. So, I mean, it's basically, you know, the grassroots progressive infrastructure in Connecticut that was frankly part of the Ned Lamont campaign. I mean, I worked on the Ned Lamont campaign back in 2006 mm-hmm. against Joe Lieberman. I mean, and Ned Lamont now is governor. And it should be said, you know, Ned Lamont has actually opposed pieces of the existing plan in the legislature, but he has his own plan. And it should be said that the health insurance industry is opposing all of it. The health insurance industry doesn't want any of it. So I would say this, the fact that the bill has been moving through the legislature means that there is real grassroots support for it, that legislators, individual legislators, I mean, if you're in Connecticut, call your individual legislator and tell them you want them to stand up against this kind of thing. Tell them you want this. I mean, that's where this is coming from.
All right, time for a public option. David Sirota, dailyposter.com is David's newsletter. It's well worth subscribing to, signing up for. You can also tweet him at David Sirota, S-I-R-O-T-A. David, thanks so much for dropping by. It's always great talking with you, my friend.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Back at you. Thank you, David.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with your calls on whatever you want to talk about today. You have an inkling of what's on my mind, although there's more. Cliff in Santa Clarita, California. Hey, Cliff, what's on your mind today?
All right, Tom. Listen, Eric Gardner selling loose cigarettes. Mm-hmm. George Floyd supposedly, allegedly passing a phony 20. Dante Wright had an air freshener hanging from his rearview mirror. What do they all have in common, Tom? They're all black and they're all murdered by the police. I just don't get how they could make a human life worth so little. You know, I've always felt life is sacred. And for so many of these young men, that's just the tip of the iceberg, obviously. If I was going to tell you the whole list, we'd be here for hours. But it's just, for these young men to get murdered for such minor offenses, it's just such a human tragedy, man. I believe racism is the driving force behind all of these. Because, man, I was a kid. I was a teenager. I was trouble. All my friends, we were all troublemakers. I got arrested a few times. I had trials. My dad would get a call at midnight, come pick up your kid. But back then, Tom, cops weren't shooting at stolen car suspects and misdemeanor stuff. It just, somewhere it changed. I don't know if it was the militarization of the police, but it didn't used to be where people were getting murdered for misdemeanor things, you know, that it escalates to this. I think these
actually
some of these cops,
among black people, it did, Cliff. We're seeing right now is nothing new. What has changed is Steve Jobs' invention, the iPhone. Basically, what we're seeing now is that everybody's carrying a camera in their pocket. And the story that we have been hearing from, we white people have been hearing from the black community for our whole entire lives, and apparently not taking seriously that the police are out here trying to kill us or kill them. That story is now irrefutable. That's what's happened. We've had a technological change, and it is leading to a cultural change. And I think it's a great thing. But this is nothing new, Cliff. If anything, probably there's a lot fewer police killings of unarmed black people now than there were 20 years ago because it's harder for cops to get away with it.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just such a tragedy, Tom. I mean, you know, the life
obscene.
Of a human is worth so much more. It's obscene. It's insane. I mean, and then to have people out there taking the cop's side, you know, like they deserved it. You know, oh, he did some opiates, so he deserved it. I mean, what are you talking about? It's a human life.
Yeah, well, this was the whole sales pitch on Fox News was, oh, my God, Chauvin is going to go to jail. You know, this is a travesty, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, what? Really? Really? I mean, it's just, you know. But, you know, racism, my op-ed today over at HartmanReport.com is essentially about this, Cliff, that racism, and it's kind of following on the rant that I did yesterday, that racism is also about greed. Racism, you know, it's like this is all the Republican Party has to sell anymore is greed. And racism is I got mine, but you can't have any part of it. Right. That's the essential piece of racism that I think a lot of people miss is that, you know, it's about greed like everything else. I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling when you consider it. But, you know, this is the reality of America. And frankly, thank God that white people are waking up to what's happening, to what the daily normal experience of black people has been in the United States throughout my lifetime. And like I said, it was a hell of a lot worse in my dad's lifetime. And it was a hell of a lot worse in my grandfather's lifetime for black people in the United States. So, Cliff, thank you for the call. Spot on. We'll be right back. I do have a few stories here that that I want to get into as we continue through the day. The first, I'll just drop this right now. And well, actually, two real quick ones, and then I'll pick up your phone calls here. The first one is that 1 year ago, the former guy, and I love it that this is how Joe Biden is referring to him, and I'm going to adopt it. 1 year ago today, the former guy said, well, maybe we could inject bleach to kill the virus. Yeah, let us never forget. And then secondly, it turns out that Donald Trump delayed $20 billion in aid to Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, presumably because the mayor of, I believe it's the capital city of Puerto Rico, remember her going on TV trashing Donald Trump and him trashing her on Twitter and everything? Well, he got his revenge. He is one of the most revengeful or vengeful people I've ever seen in politics. I mean, you know, maybe other people are like this behind the scenes, but I mean, this guy revels in revenge, as Michael Cohen has pointed out on a couple of occasions. And the story is in The Guardian right now. The Housing Department, HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban, the HUD's Inspector General just released a 46-page report, which had been suppressed during the Trump administration. Keep in mind, this was 2017. This is in the neighborhood of 3 years ago, that Hurricane Maria killed at least 5,000 people in Puerto Rico, did mind-boggling amounts of damage to the island. There are still people living under blue tarps. And the reason why, and by the way, Ben Carson, who was the secretary of HUD, refused to cooperate with the investigation, so we don't have his statement on it. But they've been holding up this money until literally this week. On Monday, HUD removed restrictions imposed by the Trump administration on access to $8.2 billion in community development block grant mitigation money. The agency stalled the release of the disaster relief aid and imposed additional restrictions on how the island could access the funds. Keep in mind, this was September 2017. 5,000 people died quickly, you know, from drowning and landslides and collapses and building collapses and things. And then we have no idea how many more thousands of people died because the Trump administration also basically blocked any kind of investigation into this. This is criminal. Donald Trump, in order to get vengeance against a mayor in Puerto Rico, took actions that led to the death of American citizens who live in Puerto Rico, which is all the people in Puerto Rico. I mean, Puerto Rico is an American territory. Puerto Ricans are American citizens. I was mind-boggled. It boggled my mind to see the article in The Guardian. What boggles my mind even more is that it's not on the front page of the New York Times right now. I think this is just a huge story. So, anyway, as I said, let's pick up your phone calls here. Russ in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russ, what's on your mind?
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call. As usual, I hear you talking about the Republican Party. When are we going to clean our own party up? I mean, you got Feinstein, that vice president asked her to step down. She told her, get lost. Who do you think you're talking to? And you got Kristen Sinema. What did she do? Oh, $11 an hour with Romney. It doesn't kick into 2026. Tara Mendy of Kentucky was laughing about it. And, of course, you got Joe Manchin that just doesn't want to pass anything in West Virginia. I mean, Tom, we've got to do something. There's 100 House members today that were on TV complaining about we've got to start passing bills. And these three are holding up everything, Tom. I mean, this, and the thing about it is Joe Manchin voted for every Republican judge, am I right or wrong, because he's in West Virginia?
I don't recall if you're right or wrong, Russ, but your analysis of the situation is mostly spot on. You know, where the jury is still out, we have not yet confronted a major vote in the Senate. And when that happens, that's when we're going to find out what's real and what's not real. I mean, Kyrsten Sinema has a very bizarre or strange, shall we say, political history. She went from being a Bernie Sanders liberal. She used those super liberal credentials to get herself into the Senate. And then all of a sudden she became a big corporate Dem. I don't know if it's because all of a sudden she saw how much money was available to her, you know, from lobbyists or what. But or she just likes being a contrarian. but she's kind of a wild card because I don't understand what motivates her. Joe Manchin, I understand what motivates him. He's in a state that Donald Trump won by, what, 30 points, something like that? And he's got 40. To keep the people in West Virginia, 40 points. So he's got to keep the people in West Virginia on his side. And I don't think he's going to leave the Democratic Party, you know, like Jim Jeffords left the Republican Party or Joe Lieberman did. I don't think he's going to because the Republican Party is so badly damaged. Although the governor of his state, Jim Justice, left the Democratic Party, you know, like the week after he won the election, very shortly soon thereafter. So we'll see. Russ, it's going to come down to a vote on one of these issues, on policing or voting. Hang on.
To the Tom Hartman program.
Hate it when that guy steps on me. It's going to come down to a vote. And that vote is going to be very, very carefully chosen by Chuck Schumer. And then we're going to see who's what.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Chris in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. We're facing the two biggest threats in the history of mankind, climate change and biodiversity loss. Unless
Agreed.
We stop pumping carbon in the atmosphere and go to green energy, the climate could reach a point of no return where nobody can stop climate change.
Yeah, and there is considerable concern, Chris, that we may have already reached that point, that at least it'll get so bad, even if we were to stop right now, that it'll be disruptive of human civilization. The question is, will it, you know, be disruptive of human life on this planet? I don't think we're there yet, but in fact, I'm not sure that we're even close to there yet. But we have more carbon in the atmosphere right now than this planet has seen in over 3 million years. And 3 million years ago, there were no humans on this planet. There were hominids, you know, you had a couple of pre-humans, but no humans. And so, you know, some really, really big questions and spot on, Chris. And the two things are not unrelated. Climate change and biodiversity loss are inextricably intertwined. And the common denominator among both of them is massive increases in human population and massive exploitation of the biosphere, not just for human survival, but for human pleasure and, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just terrible. Chris, thank you. Spot on. Rick in Visalia, California. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Yeah, I have a thought came to me the other day about the timing of recessions and depressions. You know, they are harvest events. There are times when the millionaires and billionaires who caused the billionaires and multi-billionaires who caused them to happen harvest their gains. In other words, there's a bull market for a while, a bubble, when they've got people lured into making lots of investments, real estate, securities, business loans to start or expand a business. And then once that cash is there, when the market collapses, they basically, everyone else goes bankrupt and they walk out the back door with this suitcase full of cash. So I call it a harvest event. And what occurred to me the other day was, why would they let something like that happen during at least a progressive Democratic administration? During a Republican administration, their harvest is protected. But during a Democratic administration, the Democrats will do something about it, and what they do about it is going to cost them. I just got mm-hmm. to get your opinion, because I don't know anything. I really don't have any data to back this up. It's just an impression I got.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, I'd have to do some digging into the numbers. We do know that one of the bugs or features, depending on how you look at it, of capitalism is that, you know, every 5 to 10 years you have a recession. And I think your characterization of them as harvest events is not only accurate and brilliant, Rick, but back in the 20s, back, you know, post-1929, I believe it was Morgan, J.P. Morgan, but I could be wrong. I think he was Herbert Hoover's Treasury Secretary, if I'm remembering my history right. And, you know, he said in response to the crash of 1929, he said, liquidate everything, liquidate labor, liquidate business, liquidate the stock market, just liquidate the banks, let them all collapse, and the good people will step in and pick up the pieces. In other words, us rich guys see this as an enormous buying opportunity, which is exactly what the Great Depression was, and every recession since then. The second worst recession that we had in the United States after the Great Depression happened in the second or third year of Reagan's presidency. And, you know, we bounced back from that fairly quickly with, a lot of intervention on the part of the Reagan administration in Congress. But you had Democrats controlling Congress at that time. But to the extent that there may be a, you know, let's not do this during Democratic administrations, or even that there's any, that these folks have any control over this, that's something I can't certify. I don't know if I can agree with you on that or not. I'd have to do a lot more research, but certainly look at the billionaires in America have massively. I mean, they've increased their wealth, you know, over $1 trillion, just as a result of the recession that came about as a result of COVID. Or you could call it a depression. I mean, there's still, we had, today it was a little over 500,000 people filed new unemployment claims in the last week. We are still 8-10 million people down from, you know, in the labor force than from just a year ago, and or a little more than a year ago before the pandemic. But I think that you're onto something, Rick, and I'd encourage you to do some digging on it. I will do some poking around on it this weekend. If you find anything, you know, drop me a note, send me a tweet, whatever. It would be that's the kind of thing that would make a fascinating hypothesis, even for a book. But it would take some really, really deep analysis. Rick, thank you
for my question, or at least for giving
my
us
pleasure.
Some thought.
Yeah. Yeah, good talking to you. I appreciate it. Keep thinking. I'm telling you, we got some of the smartest listeners on earth. It is such a privilege and a pleasure to do this show with you guys. Al Barr in Chestertown, Maryland. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, sir, Tom. Thanks for letting me talk. I love your show. Before I say anything, but,
thank you.
I was curious, why do you think it seems like I haven't heard anything about Julian Assange, his situation, anywhere on the media at all? And I was curious why you think that is, because it seems like somebody should be talking about him because he's, you know, a pretty important journalist. And that was basically it. I'll let you go, and, you know, I just
sure.
Wondering what's happening with that. Thanks.
I think there's a lot of ambivalence about Julian Assange. You know, he started out as a crusader for transparency, essentially, publishing things that really needed to be published in many cases, you know, particularly about the crimes that George Bush and Dick Cheney were committing. And then it appeared that he got into bed with the Russians or with somebody, you know, maybe with the Republicans, in an effort to damage Hillary Clinton. An explicit effort. I mean, there's like emails that Julian Assange was a party to talking about trying to help get Donald Trump elected. And that was the point, assuming that that's all true, by the way. I mean, these narratives, none of these narratives have been tested in court. But, you know, if that's true, I think that's the point at which a lot of people, particularly Democrats and progressives, said, maybe he was a good guy, but maybe he kind of went off the edge. I don't know if you saw the movie that was made, Jeff Scholl's production company made the movie about Julian Assange a couple of years ago. His growing up in this cult where everybody bleached their hair white, at which he had continued to do throughout his life. And there was just this very, very strange cult. I don't know. He's kind of an enigmatic guy. And I personally am, you know, have a lot of ambivalence about Julian Assange because, like I said, I think, you know, being, you know, pushing transparency and being a vehicle for publishing things that governments don't want out there, good thing. Doing that selectively, apparently he had the ability to publish information about Trump that would have been very, very negative to Trump. He chose not to do that. Doing that selectively, that's a whole different thing. But, I, you know, the bottom line is, you know, he is waiting for a day in court, I believe. Hopefully, a lot of that will be bringing things to light. Larry in Los Angeles. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
Hi, you guys started talking about the recessions, and I have actually looked the data up. Every time a Republican gets a first term, he takes our country into a recession. And it's happened for the last 120 years. It used to happen with Democrats also when they would have a first term. But what started happening with FDR is he started trying to include blacks into the economy so that they would prosper along with the rest of the population. And since that time, in the last 68 years, you have Democrats only giving us one recession in the last 68 years of our history. Republicans have given us 10 recessions in that same time frame.
Whoa.
And that's because they're trying to tune the economy in a way so that minorities do not prosper. And that, this is why you always see all this money being just given to mainly rich white males. So it's not just that the business sector has systemic racism built into it. The government does it also. So right now, even though you were about to say something?
Just real quickly, Larry, I'm curious if the Republican equation is let's get the recession in as soon as we take office, you know, or in the first year or so, because when we recover from the recession, people will forget the recession. They will remember the recovery and they will think, gee, that Republican really made the economy good. What do you think?
Republicans are basically ignorant. And the other caller was correct that that is sort of a harvest period that Republicans they don't really care about the fact that they're getting a recession because the government's going to step in and make the major corporations whole again. And they're doing this.
Yeah.
This is sort of the harvest and the planting season. The Democrats had a great economy.
But the Democrats aren't playing that game. Yeah, I get it. Larry, fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Once again, we've got the brightest people on the planet here listening to this program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Kent in Los Angeles. Hey, Kent, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me on. I love your program. Some years ago, you had a former Surgeon General on your show, and he was talking about vaccinations, the things that were in them, and it didn't sound too healthy. I was wondering if there's been more, you know, a technology that's improved or, you know, they make improved vaccinations. Because I know some of them are effective, like polio and so forth. You know, they got us through a lot. But then, anyway, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, Kent, you're probably talking about, I don't recall the guy's name. There was a guy who was a former Surgeon General we had on. We also had Bobby Kennedy on. I think he has since kind of gone off the rails. But the objections that were being shared on my program at that time, things that I then agreed with and I still think are concerns, are number one, that the vaccine companies were using mercury-based preservatives. Thimerosal is the name of it. That's been largely phased out now, and it only very rarely occurs. And the second was that children were being given a whole bunch of vaccines all at once, specifically the MMR, when they really probably should be staged so that, you know, you get one shot every 2 or 3 months so that the immune system doesn't get overwhelmed. All of that was tied into this fear that vaccine was somehow causing autism. And that has been largely debunked. So I've just been staying away from the topic ever since then because I'm vaccinated. My kids are vaccinated. I really and truly believe that I got the Pfizer vaccine for the coronavirus. I think vaccines have done a lot of good for Americans. I am a little concerned about the limits of liability that we've put on vaccine manufacturers at the federal government level. But again, I just don't want to go off on that because these small concerns, and that's really what they are, small concerns. You know, are we giving kids too many vaccines over too short a period of time? Are we using preservatives and adjuvants, these things that increase the potency of vaccines like alum, which is basically aluminum? Are we using those inappropriately? And what about the limits of liability? Those are all things that, you know, we probably should have a conversation about. But the anti-vaxxers are now using those 3 points in particular as if they are like some kind of massive smoking gun that proves there's all kinds of terrible stuff going on and you should never vaccinate your kids and all this kind of, and I think frankly that's doing a whole hell of a lot more damage than any good that would come out of a conversation about maybe we should back off on the legal protections we're giving the vaccine industry, for example. It's almost impossible now to have a conversation about any kind of vaccine that doesn't end up stirring up these anti-vaxxers. And, you know, I just don't want them to have any part of my show any longer. Mm-hmm. Not that they ever did in a big way, but that's the conversation that you're probably remembering. And it's also why in the last couple of years I haven't gone back there, because it's just like a lot of these people have just turned, you know, they've gone full QAnon, you know, on some of this stuff.
Which is interesting. Ken, there were so many components that he thought were bad, like battery acid, you know, the former surgeon general.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. But sulfuric acid, you know, might be used to clean vials or something, but there's no battery acid in your vaccines.
None of that. So mercury was the only real issue.
Yeah. Ken, I got to run. I'm sorry. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, picking up your calls, Mike in La Mita, California. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for supporting KPFK and happy Shakespeare's 457th birthday.
Okay, you're welcome, Mike, and I didn't realize it was his birthday. Happy, you know, it's also Drink Bleach Day, Donald Trump's. What's up, Mike?
I'm calling. Yesterday, you did a little story on a school reopening in Beverly Hills where a bunch of anti-maskers showed up to try to convince these 9-year-olds not to wear masks. And you ask, what can you do about people like that? And it struck me that this is basically a reference to an old Lily Tomlin routine from the 1970s, before there were cell phones or the internet, when she cited all these solitary crackpots wandering the streets of New York City mumbling to themselves and how the social services department should get them together so they'll be mumbling to one another. And it struck me, well, the internet has taken care of that, and now we have anti-maskers who actually get to a feeling of social interaction by getting together and being crazy together. So I think it's a tribute to Lily Tomlin for having called this one. And
God bless
technology.
Lily is one of the best actors and the best comedians on earth. I mean, she is so brilliant and has provided, I know Louise and I, so much entertainment for so many years, and she's still making great television. But, to your point, Mike, I think this is one of the things that Facebook has done. You know, they're a theoretical mission anyway was, you know, bringing people together, and they brought the crazy people together. Not just Facebook, obviously. But go ahead.
On the bright side of insanity, though, I looked at this Beverly Hills fiasco, and there was a total of five total persons trying to convince.
Really?
Yeah, there was a video of it.
And this made national news. That's pretty weird, too.
Well, I got a little coverage in the local Beverly Hills Journal, but only five crazies there, and the big 500 Ku Klux Klanners that were supposedly convened in Huntington Beach a couple of weeks ago, it turns out they're only, according to the head of the local Anti-Defamation League, there are only 10 recognizable Klanners that showed up, and there are much larger numbers of people who were chasing them off and yelling, Nazis, go home. So people can take a little bit of encouragement from those sorts of steps.
There you go, Mike. And in a way, it's sort of like the old Tea Party thing, you know, where the Koch brothers funded this Freedom Works thing that, created these Tea Party events where they'd rent these $300,000 buses and rent venues and hire PR firms and do all this kind of stuff. And the media would just cover it all breathlessly. And it would be, you know, 50 or 100 people, who seemed kind of confused because they had signs like, keep your government hands off my Medicare and stuff like that.
And there's
spot
also
on.
The
Mike.
So there's a press convention of trying to hype up whatever you're covering to using selected camera angles and making a few people look like a big mob, which tends to blow some things out of proportion.
Yeah, it's the old, if it bleeds, it leads. And sometimes they have to create the blood. And I think that's what they're doing. Mike, thank you very much. It's great to hear from you, as always. Lynn in El Segundo, listening on KPFK. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
Hi, good morning. I just want you to know you put a lot of pressure on me to be the smartest person in the world. But anyway, one of the smart listeners.
Okay.
My question, I just have a simple question about the D.C. statehood situation. I know everybody knows we're going to get, if it happens, we get two more senators, yay.
Right.
But what happens in the House? I know we have Eleanor Holmes Norton serving, but she doesn't vote at this time. And I heard that what might happen is not a good thing for the Democrats, because they might have to shuffle representatives, take seats from other neighboring Democratic states. So I don't know if you know, have any information on that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, that would not be the case, because representatives are apportioned based on the population of the state, not of the territory or the surrounding areas. And the population of Washington, D.C. is a little larger than Wyoming, and I think it's right in the neighborhood of Vermont. And both those states have one member of the House. So my guess is that Eleanor Holmes Norton would simply be elevated from a delegate, which is her official title right now, which means she can speak, she can listen, but she can't vote, to a representative. And then, of course, the next election would decide whether she was going to continue in that position or she'd be replaced. I'm guessing she would continue. The people of D.C. love her. I lived there for 7 years. She does a great job of representing the city. So I don't think there's any downside to this. At least I've not seen anything that seriously suggests that.
I'm just curious that, like, the limit is the number of representatives is 435. So it just seems like they have to cut from somewhere. But I'll take your word for it.
No, they don't. They don't. And I think Eleanor Holmes Norton is already one of those 435, although I could be wrong on that. But, you know, but the number of it's not so much the number of representatives that's fixed. Actually, I'll have to go back and look at that. I was going to say it's the population, but I'll have to go back and look at that. Lynn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And we've got a story about red meat that I'm going to get to in just a moment, which I think is a pretty damn good one. Meanwhile, the Oklahoma legislature has just passed a bill that legalizes murdering protesters with cars. Not making this up. This is from the Associated Press, not the World Communist League, the Associated Press. The state Senate voted 38-10, mostly along party lines, for a bill that now heads to the governor's desk. The measure is one of a series of GOP-backed proposals that would increase criminal penalties for activities associated with protests over racial injustice and police brutality. Specifically, the bill would make it a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and a $5,000 fine for anyone who blocks the use of a public street. Remember that part about the First Amendment, the right of the people to peaceably assemble and petition their government for redress of grievance? That's the phrase from the First Amendment. Yeah, well, so much for that. The measure would also, but now here's where it gets really bizarre. The measure would also grant a motorist criminal and civil immunity if they kill or injure someone while they are fleeing from a, quote, riot. From a riot? What is, fleeing from a riot. Oh, yeah. Well, all you have to do to decide that it's a riot is to have the police declare it a riot. And if it's a bunch of people who are protesting police violence, surprise, surprise, it's going to be a riot. It's going to be considered a riot. It's going to be called a riot. Rob Standridge, a Republican from Norman, Oklahoma, who wrote the bill, said it was prompted mostly by an incident in Tulsa last summer in which a pickup truck drove through a crowd gathered on a Tulsa interstate while protesting the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Several people were injured, including one who was paralyzed from the waist down after falling from an overpass. But the driver, whose family was in the car, was not charged. So the driver drives into the crowd, pushes one guy over the edge of the overpass. He's paralyzed from the waist down for the rest of his life. And the result, the response by this Republican who sponsored this legislation that has just passed the state Senate in Oklahoma, 38-10, was to say, we're not going to prosecute people who do that. No, not going to happen. In fact, he goes on to say, the kids cowered in the back seat because they feared for their lives. That's what this bill is all about. So those protesters made them fear for their lives. The protesters who got hit with the truck, the protesters who got run over, the protesters who, one of whom got pushed right up to the edge of an overpass and flipped over the bridge and broke his back. Those were the protesters who were so scary that the kids in the back seat feared for their lives, and therefore daddy had to kill some try to kill some protesters. Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Anyhow, we'll be back. I've got an amazing story to tell you about red meat and heart disease, and then we'll pick up your phone calls. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you. A little geeky science for you for the day. This is a study of 20,000 individuals. This is a good, solid study. It was published in a journal called Preventative Cardiology at the Scientific Congress of the European Society of Cardiology, heart medicine. And what they found there, first of all, they measured three types of, they used three different ways of measuring heart function, how well your heart is doing. First, cardiovascular magnetic resonance, CMR, which assesses the function of the heart. It's sort of like an MRI, you know, only specific to the heart. So it's looking at the soft tissue, at the muscles and things, and the inside of the arteries and veins. Second, they used a technique called novel CMR radiomics, which is used to extract detailed information from heart images, such as shape and texture. And the third thing they measured was the elasticity of blood vessels. The elasticity of blood vessels determines the variability of your blood pressure, the ability of your body to respond to demands for higher blood pressure, like, you know, as a consequence of exercise, or to downregulate as a consequence of, for example, relaxing or meditating or sleeping. They also adjusted, by the way, they looked at a whole bunch of variables: age, gender, deprivation, education, smoking, alcohol, exercise, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and body mass index as a measure of obesity. So they took all of those variables and basically sorted them out, filtered them out. If you have one obese person in the control group, you have one obese person in the non-control group, for example. So it doesn't matter, right? So all you're measuring is heart. That's all they're looking at. And this study was published over at ScienceDaily.com. And just to give credit, because I'm going to quote a sentence or two, the researchers found that greater intake of red meat was associated with worse imaging measures of heart health across all measures studied. Specifically, individuals with higher meat intake had smaller ventricles, poorer heart function, and stiffer arteries, all markers of worse cardiovascular health. Now, they compared this, I've told you for years that, I became a vegetarian when I was 16, and then maybe, 15 years ago or so, I started eating fish occasionally, and then I stopped eating fish for a year or so, and then maybe, 6-8 months ago, Louise and I started eating fish maybe once a month. You know, we will try to eat oily fish occasionally, but I don't eat dairy products, but. So anyhow, the researchers found greater intake of red and processed meat was associated with worse imaging across all measures studied. Meat intake had smaller ventricles, poorer heart function, stiffer arteries, all markers of cardiovascular health. As a comparison, the researchers also tested the relationship between heart imaging measures and intake of oily fish, which has previously been linked with better heart health. They found that as the amount of oily fish consumption rose, heart function improved, and arteries were stretchier. Interesting. Very interesting. Apparently my body is telling me good stuff. They go on to say, this is one of the researchers, Dr. Razi Estabra, says, for example, it's possible that greater red meat intake leads to raised blood cholesterol, and this in turn causes heart disease. Our study suggests that these four factors do play a role in the links between meat intake and heart health. She noted, quote, there is some evidence that red meat alters the gut microbiome, leading to higher levels of certain metabolites in the blood, which have been linked to greater risk of heart disease. And, I think this is just absolutely fascinating. You want to read the whole thing. The European Society of Cardiology is where it is published, and you can get the entire study there. But, I mean, this just comes on the heel. I remember back in the 70s when Louise and I were just like, crusaders for vegetarianism. And a friend of ours owned a restaurant and his father got heart disease and was literally dying of heart disease. And his father was in his 60s. And when we were all in our 30s at the time. And he took his father out to Nathan Pritigan's place where they put him on basically a vegan diet. And his father's heart disease reversed. And his father lived for another, decade and a half just fine, thank you very much. Just never again ate meat or dairy. And, I've seen this with my own eyes over and over and over again. Anyhow, I'll be picking up your phone calls on the other side of this break. I'm going to reconnect to our studio so we'll get rid of our latency problem here. And so we'll be right back with your thoughts on whatever's on your mind right after this. Stick around. It's the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Alan Dershowitz, that great legal mind and, friend of Donald Trump and his little buddy Jeffrey. Alan Dershowitz says that Maxine Waters is doing the same thing as the Klan. Right. Yeah, the Klan. Yeah, Maxine Waters. He really said that. He said her actions are similar to intimidation efforts of the Klan toward juries in the 60s and 50s and 60s. Tucker Carlson said that, what Maxine Waters said was, if Chauvin gets off, that people in Minneapolis need to speak out. She is not advocating violence. She obviously is not advocating violence, never has. But Tucker Carlson says that what she is saying is, do what we say or we'll kill you. Right. This at the same time that the city is now mourning the death of Duante Wright, another black man, in this case, almost a child murdered by the police. It is just remarkable. It's not the way that the justice system should work. But it is the way that it has worked forever. So anyhow, picking up your phone calls, Alfredo in Mountain View, California. Hey, Alfredo, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I hope your shoulder is feeling better.
Yeah, slowly it is. Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I have been vegan for 36 plus years, and you're talking about red meat. Just blaming red meat and discounting all the other animal meats or animal products out there, I think is a big mistake. For example, a piece of breast of chicken has the same amount of cholesterol than a piece of red meat. So, yeah, and dairy products as well are very harmful. I don't know if you know Dr. Cadwell Esselstyn. He is an authority on reversing heart disease with plant-based diets, without surgery, without drugs. As a matter of fact, he was one of the physicians who helped former President Bill Clinton to reverse his heart disease with plant-based diets.
And, plant-based diets absolutely work to do that. A dear friend of mine, Earl Katz, reversed his heart disease that way. My friend Tom Larson, his father, reversed his heart disease. That was back, 40 years ago at the Pritikin Clinic. I've seen it over and over again. I am convinced, in fact, that dairy products are even worse than meat. And meat is pretty awful stuff.
Yeah.
I think the one exception to that, and maybe this is just, my dad's father was a Norwegian immigrant. And so we always had basically Norwegian food kicking around the house. And a lot of that was kippered herring and herring and these basically small oily fish. And so I grew up eating that stuff. And that my wife thinks just tastes totally creepy, anchovies and things. And I think that that's the exception to it. But when I say that I eat fish, I'm talking about 1 ounce every 2 weeks. it's not like every meal.
You have to be careful with fish because the studies that I have read, and you can look them up, and there is an organization called Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, or PCRM.org. And the studies that they have, they show that eating fish also elevates your cholesterol. And so the so-called benefits of the oil in fish, actually, they're not very well studied. And they have demonstrated that they do elevate your cholesterol. So I will watch out for that as well.
Yeah, and that may be the function of it just being a high-protein food, and high-protein foods tend to be inflammatory, and cholesterol is a response to inflammation. But I am not a nutritionist. I am just, somebody who's been obsessed with how I eat ever since I was a teenager. And so that's all I can say. But Alfredo, you are absolutely right. For anybody who has, any kind of concern about their heart, go, of course, talk to your doctor first. But there's a documentary out called Forks Over Knives that just lays this stuff out.
Yes, excellent movie.
And,
it's an excellent movie,
It is absolutely brilliant. Alfredo, I got to move along, but thank you for the call.
Thank you for
contributing to the conversation. We'll be back with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.